Eastern Federal Retirement Systems of the City of Detroit versus Axygen Inc. Good morning, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Mr. Berger?
Yes, Your Honor.
You want to say you want to have 12 minutes for your main argument and yep. save three for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. In 2017 and 2018, Axygen sold shares of its common stock to investors in two public offerings, raising $141 million. Axygen's products are used in surgeries to treat peripheral nerves. In the registration statements and prospectuses that Axygen used to sell this stock, Axygen made specific representations about two matters that were critical to investors' assessment of their business and prospects. The first thing that Axygen said was about the number of injuries each year to peripheral nerves and the resulting number of extremity nerve repair procedures conducted in the United States, also each year. Second statement, the company said what the basis was for those numbers that it gave to investors. It cited three studies. This appeal only concerns those two statements. Plaintiffs have asserted claims under Section 11 of the 1933 Securities Act for the falsity of those statements. Originally, Your Honor.
So can I confirm before you continue that yes. you've dropped really all your allegations of fraud, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. That is correct. So that what this case does not concern is Section 10B. It does not involve scienter. We haven't pursued those claims. It doesn't involve the materiality of the statements. That was not an issue in the district court. It's clear that the statements that we've challenged were material. And it really doesn't involve whether the statements actually were false or not. As we pled in the complaint, a myriad of facts showing that the statements about the number of procedures in the United States each year were false, and that the supposed support for those statements, in fact, didn't support them. So,
talk about the each year statement. I mean, I see your argument that when I say, you know, I come to Jacksonville each year, that I'm both saying something about what I've done, and I may be also saying, you know, I'm coming this year. I intend to come in future years. But we said in Carvelli that when there's kind of like a mixed statement like that, you just look at it as going forward, a forward-looking statement. How isn't this kind of like a mixed statement, the use of the phrase each year?
Your Honor, with all respect, I think what the court said in Carvelli is if you have a mixed statement that includes a statement of present fact and a statement of a future expectation, the court is supposed to parse it and apply the safe harbor would apply to the forward-looking part. But the non-forward-looking part doesn't get the protection of the safe harbor. I think that's what the court said in Carvelli. The issue in Carvelli was that the challenge was to an overall paragraph or section in the prospectus there, and the court said we can't parse it. But here we can parse it.
How do we parse it, I guess? That's my question. It looks like the phrase each year is both past and forward. How do you parse that?
Correct, Your Honor. And the district court said in its decision that each year, if you're having an offering in the middle of the year, you don't know what's going to happen for the rest of the year. Fair enough, although I have a little point I want to make about that. But we parse it because there's a statement about past years. And that was important to investors. The company didn't say, this year we expect 700,000 procedures, or next year we expect. They said each year in the United States. And why was this important in 2018? They did an offering in November of 2017 and in May of 2018. So even if the 2017 offering, there could be some issue. In 2018, where they made the same statement each year in the United States, investors were like, okay, you told us that last year in November. Now you're telling this in May when 2017 is finished. So obviously, you must be saying there were this number of procedures in 2017 because now you're saying it again in 2018 in May. It's only logical. It's the only way that could be understood. Secondly, Your Honors, there was the statement that we've challenged about the basis for those numbers. They said that those numbers were based on three studies, epidemiological studies, and they
can I ask you a question regarding that? Because it seems to me, since you've disclaimed all allegations of fraud, you really then have, you're proceeding under a theory that the opinions embedded in these two statements contain untrue statements of material fact. So can you expand on what the untrue statements are?
Yes, Your Honor. There are two separate issues, whether the statement was a forward-looking statement and then whether it's an opinion. And I think Your Honor is getting to whether the statement was an opinion.
Right, but you also have to show me how it's an untrue statement.
Correct. So the untrue statement with respect to those sources is that those sources do not support in any way the statement about the number of extremity nerve injuries each year, 1.4 million, and they do not support that there were 700,000 repair procedures in the United States. Those studies don't support it. We've cited many, many facts that show that that's the case. In any event, that's a fact question that ought not to have been decided, and I don't believe was decided in the district court, as to whether those studies in fact support the claim is a fact question. But we've pled plenty of facts that show that the studies did not support the claim.
Answer this fact question for me. So the Supreme Court and I guess Oxygen, something like that.
Omnicare, sorry.
Yeah, not even close, was I? Omnicare said that when you use "we believe" and, you know, kind of a phrase like that, that that suggests it's an opinion. I think, am I right that all but two of the times that these statements were used, it was couched in "we believe"? Am I right about that?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, what do we do with that?
Two things. First of all, it's our contention that just by putting the words "we believe" in front of a fact statement doesn't get you the protection that opinions get, the Supreme Court said in Omnicare and in other cases. If that were the case, all an issuer would need to do was put "we believe" in front of everything that it wanted to say in an offering document, and then it would be immunized.
But isn't that what the Supreme Court in Omnicare, in Justice Kagan's opinion, where she had a discussion about the difference between an opinion and a fact, and the coffee is hot, I think the coffee is hot. I mean, when you couch things in "we believe" or "we think," the inference is there's a difference between a statement of fact, which is what you need to prove, versus an opinion, which is what the difference is here.
That's correct, Your Honor. We believe that there's a difference between saying something is hot or the best or the biggest, or then saying there are 700,000 procedures in the United States, that there's a difference. But Your Honor, let me just say that even if Your Honor is correct about this, we have satisfied the legal standard that the Supreme Court put forth in Omnicare to challenge an opinion. And it's what the Supreme Court said, and this court also affirmed in the Carvelli case just a few years ago, that there are two ways that a plaintiff can challenge a statement of opinion in a prospectus. One, if you allege that the maker of the statement didn't actually hold the opinion. We're not saying that here. Or if the statement of opinion contained an embedded statement of fact supporting the statement that was untrue. Supreme Court clearly said that, and this court said it in Carvelli.
But didn't the Supreme Court also say that Section 11 does not allow investors to, quote, second guess inherently subjective and uncertain assessments, nor does it allow investors to, quote, Monday morning quarterback an issuer's opinions?
That is correct, Your Honor, but we're not second guessing here. What we are saying is that this was a very specific statement, 700,000 peripheral nerve repair procedures in the United States each year. And they said there is support for this. The embedded statement of fact that supports that opinion are the sources. They said these are the sources that support this opinion. And those sources not only do not support the opinion, they actually undercut the opinion. And the Supreme Court was clear, and this court in Carvelli was clear, is if the speaker has information that contradicts or undercuts the embedded statement of fact, that is actionable. And we have pled that here. So we believe that we have satisfied the Supreme Court's standard in Omnicare. And the Supreme Court also said, in addition to the language quoted by Your Honor, that investors have the right not to expect baseless, off-the-cuff judgments in registration statements. And even more so, they have the right to expect that when a company that is the expert in this area makes a very specific statement that and gives you a source for it, that there is a basis in that source. Investors have a right to expect that. And we've alleged facts in this case that show that those statements and the sources were not true.
Can you go back to the forward-looking issue for me and just to address this? So it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that these statements, as far as being written in the prospectus, were written in the section about sort of anticipated market share, and you know they were couched as, you know, these are predictions, they were going forward-looking. What do we do with the context of the statements appearing in that kind of sort of predictive section of the prospectus?
Your Honor is correct. I believe most, if not all, of the statements were in the section talking about their market. That's one of the reasons why they were important to investors. But Your Honor, a company can't say we have a great market and the basis for our market is that there are this many procedures that go on in the United States. And if in fact that's not true, and we've shown here and we've pled that there not only there weren't 700,000 procedures, there were perhaps 20,000 procedures. That's material information to investors that they would want to know in evaluating the context in that paragraph, in evaluating the company's statements about its market. It's a completely different circumstance. If a company says we have a $2 billion market, but there are only 20,000 procedures done in the United States each year, then if a company says we have a $2 billion market and there are 700,000 procedures done in the United States each year.
I guess my question, and all the statements aren't in that context, but some of them are, and I guess my, you know, in context, it just seems like what the prospectus is saying is, hey, we're making this prediction. This is sort of a predictive exercise. This is what we anticipate. I guess, should we not care at all about the fact that these statements occurred in that context?
Well, Your Honor, I think that when Congress put in place the 33 Act, it took the buyer beware pre-existing state of affairs and put the onus on a company that is selling its stock to the public to be honest and forthright, including with respect to the basis for its market projections, including for the basis for what it was saying here about the number of surgeries in the United States that it was going to be able to address in its market. Thank you, Your Honor. I think the rest of my time is for rebuttal.
You have time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You have 3 minutes remaining. Thank you. Mr. Jay.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm William Jay for the appellees. I'd like to just step back to first principles because forward-looking statement is a defined term. And I'd like to take the court back to the text of the definition of forward-looking statement because we're not talking colloquially about what's forward-looking. There's a four-prong definition in the statute. I think two of those prongs are relevant here because what Axygen said in the documents that are being challenged, one, it described its market. And as I think the colloquy with Judge Brasher and my friend on the other side brought out, the market is an inherently anticipatory, future-oriented statement. That falls squarely under B, a statement of the plans and objectives of management for future operations. So that's one prong of the definition. Now, I understand that my friends have said we're no longer challenging the statements about market, but here's why that's important. Because prong D of the definition says that any statement of the assumptions underlying or relating to any other forward-looking statement is itself a forward-looking statement. So I think that's the most straightforward way to deal with a number of the things that our friends on the other side have said this morning, which is that when you have the market and the issuer expressly says that this is based on an estimate, and the estimate is here the number of procedures, for example, that is plainly a statement of the assumptions underlying the forward-looking statement about its market. That's the most straightforward way in which this is a forward-looking statement. It's clearly called out for the investing public that the documents say that forward-looking statements will be identified in these documents with words such as we believe or we estimate, and all of the statements are hedged with that language. Just a kind of housekeeping point, there's a footnote in my friend's reply brief footnote 3 that suggests that that language doesn't appear in conjunction with all of the statements. I think that's incorrect. If you look at the underlying registration statement, it refers to estimates in the passage that's being quoted there. But ultimately, that doesn't matter, because although it's helpful that they are identified as estimates, what matters is the paragraph begins, and this is to Judge Brasher's point about context, this paragraph begins by saying that the market assessment is based on what's going to come next. And then it concludes at the end of that paragraph, and I'm just looking, for example, at the 10K from 2016, it concludes, you know, as a result, you know, having gone through this whole analysis, as a result, Axygen estimates that the market sizes are A, B, C, and D. So the content of that paragraph has gone through the company's estimates. Now, one thing that the other side has urged on the court is the idea that this is just a simple counting exercise. There's no opinion, there's no estimation, there's no judgment. It's just a simple counting exercise about the number of procedures that occurred. That's just not correct, and I think that the articles themselves that are incorporated in the, or that are referred to in the relevant passage of the 10K make that clear, because there's an element of judgment inherent in assessing which procedures or which injuries involve peripheral nerve injury. I think that's well illustrated by the fact that the Seligman report and the expert firm that the plaintiffs retained came up with different numbers about how many peripheral nerve injuries there are. It doesn't matter which one is closest to the actual number. The point is that this is not knowable by looking at, as it would be if the company were talking about its own financials. If the company said, here's how many widgets we sold last year, that's the kind of thing that goes in your audited financial statements and that you can't subject to the forward-looking statement analysis. But when you are estimating something about the entire market, not just what Axygen is currently selling to, but what its competitors are selling to and what nobody is selling to, the kind of untapped market, that is absolutely an estimate. And the judgment that a company makes about how large that potential market is, you know, reflects assumptions. This, I think, well illustrates why there's protection for forward-looking statements, including the assumptions that underlie it. And that is because it is helpful for the investing public to hear from management about what they think their potential market is and on what they base that assumption. Congress, in passing the PSLRA, recognized that it would be helpful to immunize management for the content of those statements in case they did not come true, because it's
helpful. May I ask you a question? If you relied a lot on Omnicare, so I'd like to talk a little bit about opinions. So these statements that, since your opposing counsel has already agreed that fraud is out, that they're not pursuing any allegations that there was fraud or material misrepresentation, does he not have to show, if these were opinions, that there is an untrue statement of material fact in this opinion?
So if we're out of forward-looking statement and we're just, yes, we're just talking about opinion.
Let's assume that we're out of forward-looking and we're just dealing with Omnicare.
That's right. And so
in terms of
You're correct, Your Honor. So I think the quote that you read to my friend from Omnicare has to do with the language about inherently subjective and uncertain. And this I think is a good illustration. As you know, my friend says that the number of procedures or the number of injuries, you know, that's not,
because aren't those really subjective estimates on their expert's part as well?
Exactly. Nobody knows the exact number, and in producing an estimate, reasonable people can come to reasonable disagreements about what the right way to estimate it is. The reason is because what you put into your estimate, what assumptions you make, what nerve injuries you count, you know, what adjustments you make to the underlying facts, that all goes into why it's an estimate.
And didn't Omnicare, in the opinion, have a discussion about the fact that what is held to be a violation of the act is an untrue statement of material fact, because it only makes it a violation if it's a statement of fact, not just a statement, because a statement could mean an opinion or a fact.
Right. Only a statement of fact can be actionable. That's absolutely right. Now, of course, some statements of fact are immunized by the safe harbor separately. So those are independent pathways to affirm the district court's decision that if it's an opinion, it's not actionable, period. Our friends on the other side have tried to raise a disagreement with the opinion by saying essentially the basis for the opinion was bad. We disagree with the way in which you've used the sources. And so your estimate was not really based on these sources. It's still an estimate based on the cited sources. I understand that our friends disagree with it, but that's because they disagree with the assumptions that the company made based on the data. And of course, the company is telling the investing public that these are the sources from which we are drawing our estimate, that the investing public can make its own judgment, you know, based on whether they agree with that, especially because this is hedged about with the warnings that it's a forward-looking statement, and in particular, that it is an estimate.
So how do you distinguish, I think you just touched on this, but distinguish this statement from the kinds of statement that Justice Kagan addressed in Omnicare, where she said, look, if you say an opinion and then have some kind of like couched factual statement embedded in the opinion, then that's actionable. Distinguish what we've got right now.
So here, I don't think we have such an embedded factual statement. So I think that's my distinction, that the statement itself is that this is our estimate. And that our estimate is based on these articles. Now, I want to be clear, it's not saying that we're quoting the estimate from these articles or that these articles say the same number. That is not at all what the disclosure says. It says that the estimate is based on these articles, but what I think is clear is that there's some judgment involved in that.
And I thought that's where you would go. I guess the conceptual problem I'm having with that is that seems to address the truth or falsity of the statement itself, right? You're kind of saying, well, look, our statement wasn't that these articles necessarily, you know, meant that this was the number of operations a year. Isn't that about the truth or falsity of it, not whether it's an opinion?
Well, I don't think so for a couple of reasons. I mean, the only thing that I think that could be challenging would be whether the estimate is based on, in other words, like subjectively, did the company base its estimates on these articles, or is it lying about the basis that it used? Now, you heard my friend agree that they are not arguing that there is actual knowing falsehood in these documents. And I think that was really the only way they could confront that, but by saying that the statement that the estimates are based on these documents, it'd have to be alleging that that's a direct knowing falsehood by the company. That they've said several times over that they're not making that argument, the district court, in applying the forward-looking statement, safe harbor, said that because they have not alleged a knowing falsehood, which is one way to deal, one of the ways in which you get the safe harbor's protection is it's a forward-looking statement and there's no allegation that it's a knowing falsehood. And that the district court said on that basis and others, it was dismissing under the safe harbor.
So I think I understand then your position on this. Let me just give you a hypothetical. I mean, if the statement had said, you know, we believe that there are this many operations each year, based on the following articles, and it just cited some completely random articles about, you know, I don't know, the Russian invasion of Ukraine that were totally unrelated. Your position would be that's still an opinion, but perhaps it would fit under the exception for an opinion that's just a subjective lie, because there was just no way that those articles would have supported it, or something like that.
Right. The first of the two ways to that opinion can be actionable under Omnicare is if the speaker does not subjectively hold the opinion. Right. And yeah, that is not at issue here. But I think in the circumstance that you're hypothesizing, that's what that's the route the plaintiff would have to go through.
I mean, there could still be if you cited a report, okay, that had nothing to do with it, or that the numbers that were cited were completely opposite to the statement that was being made in your client's prospectus, that would be actionable.
I want to make sure I understand your question, Your Honor. So it might be actionable if the company did not subjectively believe based on the sources.
Correct. I mean, the assumption is that they know that they're just attaching this to attach a report. but they know that it's in fact not true. It doesn't support what they're stating in the position.
I think that that's basically right, and but the reason that that's a very narrow pathway is that both the forward-looking statement safe harbor and the reason that opinion is not actionable is that the securities laws, especially this part of the securities laws, which creates strict liability for false statements, is not meant to be making good faith judgments the basis for liability. So in other words, if there's room for reasonable disagreement, that's not actionable under the securities laws. What Omnicare makes clear is that saying, I know this is your opinion, but you shouldn't have this opinion. This is a dumb opinion. I disagree with your opinion. None of those is a basis for liability. And so, you know, the hypothetical that Your Honor's question gave, I think, you know, without a subjective falsehood allegation, I think you'd run into the very reason why we protect opinion statements and they're not actionable under the 33 Act.
One last question I have for you is these two routes. The district court addressed the forward-looking statement issue kind of as the primary issue, and then the opinion issue as kind of the subsidiary issue. Does it matter from purposes of like statutory construction or for any other reason if we were to affirm which one?
No, it does not. The district court regarded them correctly as alternatives, and then even within forward-looking statement, it had two alternative grounds. One, there's meaningful cautionary language, and two, there's no allegation of knowing falsehood. So, I think you can affirm on either of those grounds, and of course, we have the statute of limitations as a third alternative. In case you do decide to address the forward-looking statement point, I do want to kind of follow up on your colloquy with my friend about Carvelli, because on the question whether when you have something that joins sort of two things together, you know, my friend says, well, that there's a, you know, if there's a segregable piece, then that's about the present. Well, then that's actionable, and that's part of Carvelli, right? But there's also the part of Carvelli that discusses a statement that's sort of part present, part future, like we will continue to provide strong servicing results was the example. And the court recognized in Carvelli that that inherently says we are currently providing strong servicing results. And it gives that as an example of a statement that although it's about the present, it is protected by the safe harbor. And I think Carvelli, it's important to underscore, also didn't get into the prong D point from the definition that I raised about a statement of the assumptions underlying or relating to another forward-looking statement. So to be clear, we think that the statements are forward-looking under that passage of Carvelli, but if you wanted to go beyond Carvelli, that provision of the definition, I think, is the important one to look at, because it's not just about whether something is colloquially about the future. These assumptions are rolled into the same protection for the safe harbor for exactly the reason that the investing public wants to hear from management about what their understanding about the future is, taking it, you know, with for what it's worth, and they'll want to understand what the assumptions are that go into that opinion. Unless the court
counsel, do we need to reach the forward-looking statement, or can we decide this case based on Omnicare and whether or not this is an opinion?
You can decide this case on the latter basis. There are true alternatives. There's nothing. There is no statement that is that would be left out if you affirmed based on Omnicare. We think you could do it. It would do the whole case in either direction or kind of on either ground.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Your Honors, briefly, 2 points, one about forward-looking statement and one about opinions. With respect to forward-looking statements, I'd just like to read to the court what this court said in Carvelli. It said, to the extent that a lengthy statement includes distinct present tense and forward-looking components, it makes sense to afford safe harbor protection to the forward-looking portion, if applicable, and then evaluate the present tense statement on its own. The court then said it was joining other circuits and that the current present tense is not entitled to safe harbor with respect to the part of the statement that refers to the present. And we think that very specifically covers the statement that we believe that there are 1.4 million injuries in the United States and 700,000 procedures each year in the United States. That's a statement that's both present and future.
I hate to interrupt you because I know you have that second point, but how is that two distinct statements? I mean, that's my concern about the forward-looking issue with Carvelli is it seems like we certainly said that when there's a distinct statement that's not forward-looking, that you can analyze that as a non-forward-looking statement, but it just seems like we have one statement here.
Your Honor, that's a statement. Actually, I don't think that's forward-looking at all. When you say each year something happens, the only way common sense people understand that is it's been going on for a while. That's what it means.
Yeah.
If it was just this year, they would have and should have said just this year. The only reasonable way to read that, we believe, is that it is not a forward-looking statement.
Okay, so if it's I think that's a great point. The going on for a while is one of the things that's been giving me pause on this, which is how would it be falsifiable if we look at it as a sort of a statement about the present or the past, right? Do I falsify that statement by just showing that one year in the past there weren't this number of procedures?
Your Honor, when they offered the stock in May of 2018, we would show it was false for 2017. And that's the double point I made earlier about having done the offering in 2017 and then in 2018. If I might, Your Honor, just get briefly to the point that the points that the court have raised, again, with apologies, just quoting what this court said in Carvelli about statements of opinion. A speaker may be liable if the supporting facts she supplied were untrue. That was quoting from Omnicare. So if a CEO states that we believe our product, which contains state-of-the-art gadget, is the best on the market, she can be liable if she knows that the product actually contains a refurbished gadget. In other words, if the embedded statement of fact here, the gadget's newness is false. When they said there were 700,000 procedures each year, and then right after that, same sentence, not even a period, cited three studies, that was the embedded statement of fact. Those studies support what we're telling you about the number of procedures each year, and they did not. And Your Honor, just responding to something the court said, this is actually worse than if there were random studies about what was going on in the Ukraine side. This is worse because there's an aura of expertise that is associated with that, and the company telling you, we have these studies. Those studies, if Your Honor, look at the complaint, we've shown that those studies actually...
Counsel, you can wrap up your time as you're out over
Thank
your
you.
Time limit.
Appreciate it, Your Honor. We've addressed this in the briefs. Thank you very much, unless the court has any
Thank
additional
you.
Questions.
Thank you.